Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Seems everyone wants to ascribe blame for the disaster of New Orleans. Trouble is, blaming at this point only muddies the waters of hope for those who are trying to actually get things done. There is perhaps a huge lesson to be learned from this disaster, and as so many have said before, from the ashes of disaster, new opportunities are possible. Is that where we're headed in New Orleans? We find out when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wildside News. Darryl Malick Wiley was one of the luckier ones in New Orleans, if living in a moldering disaster zone can be considered lucky. But as with so many of us who care for our earth and the living systems, when our human populations are battered, that nature of caring quickly reaches out to our own. Well, now, people who have lost their, who cannot be in their homes, let's put it that way, who cannot be in their homes for whatever reason it is, and a lot of these people are, they're just folks. I mean, they don't have access to great big bank accounts, and they can't just go to their banker friend and say, hey, boy, tough luck for me, but write me a loan. And yet the cost of rebuilding or recreating their home must be almost impossible. What are those people supposed to do, just give up?
Well, I think some folks would like people just to give up. Because there have been a number of developers that have visions for what they want New Orleans to look like.
See, but that bothers me.
It bothers me extremely because their vision has less diversity than what New Orleans had before the storm.
Well, not only that, but it seems to be an unfair taking by people who are advantaged. And that just, to me, it rankles me. I don't oftentimes really get all that carried away on this show. I try to maintain my relative balance and sense of fairness. But I'll tell you, to be honest with you, I just think this is totally unfair. It's not what should be happening in America. But people lose their homes. Somehow they should have the right to get that home back.
That's exactly true. And it's been very frustrating to us here in New Orleans because most of the decisions about the recovery are being made in Congress. And Louisiana and Mississippi have very small delegations in Congress. And so we have to convince politicians in California, Utah, Idaho to spend money in Louisiana. And there's been a real reluctance to do that.
Yeah, wow. Well, it's going to be a long road back, and this is a difficult challenge. Well, we could go on more about that, the politics, et cetera, but we only have so much time.
Right.
And so, and we'll talk about this again, because I so much appreciate your perspective. Talk about, since you were so involved with the Sierra Club,
Yes. You
bring a unique, or truly unique perspective to this recovery. What is it that you're really focusing on now?
Well, I'm focusing on working with the Holy Cross neighborhood and then a Vietnamese American community in New Orleans East. And just this weekend, the Sierra Club and a number of other environmental and community groups held a green rebuilding exposition. And we had all sorts of vendors talking about when we're rebuilding our homes and houses, how to be more energy efficient, how to be more healthy with our building materials, how to, you know, really a lot of the green ideals as far as green building. People are really interested in that in New Orleans, and it's across the economic spectrum. I've been meeting in the Holy Cross neighborhood, and the people bringing up the green alternatives are not myself, but it's everybody in the community who sees these green building techniques as a way to save money, to protect their health, and possibly make their home more sturdy in case another hurricane comes.
Well, talk to us what that means, green building techniques.
Well, it's a lot of different things. It's one, the idea that you build your house with as much sustainable materials as possible. You insulate it well to cut down on heat loss or heat gain. In New Orleans, a lot of the older houses were built sustainably. They had windows that would open so you get a breeze through during the day. They had shutters that you could close, and so the sun wouldn't come right in the house. They had 12-foot ceilings, so the heat would rise away from you. They were on pillars, so the air could go below you. So it's some of it's relearning the old architectural styles that the, you know, many of the homes in New Orleans were built with. But then you add in the new things that are happening, solar hot water heaters, which are in New Orleans and South Louisiana, very cost effective, can be paid back in almost 2 years. Solar energy cells on roofs to produce their own electricity, insulating houses so they're better. And then in the building materials, putting plaster instead of sheetrock, and natural plasters that you can actually stain with different colors and you never have to paint again. Making sure your materials that you put in the house don't put off any kind of vapors that could be toxic to your health. So a whole wide range of green building and green thoughtfulness is coming about in thinking about how to rebuild New Orleans. And it's really exciting for me, who's been involved so heavily in environmental issues for 30 years, to see that not only mainstream has caught up, but they're pushing even harder to get more kind of things happening than New Orleans.
Typically, when you try to innovate,
right,
and bring in new strategies and techniques, right away you run into building codes and other problems. How's that being handled?
One thing that happened after the storm, the state legislature passed a statewide new building code. Until that happened last year, there was no building code in the state of Louisiana.
Hmm.
And as part of that, there is a whole section on energy efficiency that at one point was taken out, but the Sierra Club and architects were able to get put back in the bill. So we have sort of a basis in the building code for energy efficiency and some different things.
Mm-hmm.
We're still looking at doing additional changing and strengthening of the building code in New Orleans to bring in even more energy efficiency ideas, hurricane-resistant ideas. So it's an ongoing effort to move things forward.
Well, one thing we hear about is the concept of building the houses up off the ground, so
right,
many feet. How on the ground, literally, how are people responding to those concepts in terms of rebuilding?
Well, it depends on which parts of town you're in. Like in Holy Cross, most of the homes down there were built in the 1850s, 60s, 70s, and they were built 3 to 4 feet off the ground.
Hmm.
So they're already, you know, up like that, and we don't think there's going to have to be any additional moving them any higher than they are currently. We don't know if that's true because FEMA might change their mind.
Now, was that done with foundations or was it more on pilings?
It was done on piers.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the houses are built on a series of brick piers, pillars, up about 3 feet. And you have a porch and then steps into the house.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And that's some of the, you know, this is the traditional building method in New Orleans, was putting things on piers like that, because historically the river, Mississippi River, would flood the community. So you would want to have that little advantage, so you wouldn't have to rebuild your house every year. What happened post-World War II in the building boom, sort of those years, contractors pushed the city council to do more building houses on slab, mainly because it cost the builders a lot less money to do it that way. And they were thinking very short-term how they could make money, but not the long-term sustainable way.
Well, and of course, that's where we get into trouble.
That's usually where we get into trouble, yes.
Where we just kind of ignore the fact that nature will win.
Yes, yes. It's very interesting. Well, you know, relearning a lot of things that we have forgot here in New Orleans historically, because there was a tradition up the river from New Orleans. All the plantation homes and a lot of the houses on there were all built. They were designed so that the whole first floor could flood.
Hmm.
And you would have eating areas down there and things like that. But when you knew the river was going to flood in the spring, you'd move everything up to the second floor and you just lived up there.
That is so amazing.
And the other thing that's happening that's really upsetting to me and lots of folks here is we have hundreds, if not thousands, of homes that are going to have to be torn down because of damage from the flood. And what we're seeing with FEMA, their mindset is so focused on, we've got to get the debris out of here, and the way we do that is get a bulldozer, crunch it up, put it in a truck, and bury it in the ground, which is, in my way of thinking, you know, 18th, 19th century thinking. Instead of really training teams to go in and deconstruct the homes, salvaging as much as possible, recycling as much as possible, and then you only have a little bit to go into landfills rather than a lot. And that's where it comes to the issue, the other issue I'm working on near the Vietnamese-American community in New Orleans East. This community is the largest concentrated population of Vietnamese-American in the United States. They came back very soon after the storm and started rebuilding their community and did exactly what the mayor of New Orleans said. Think out of the box. Think creative. What do you want your community to look like? And they came up with this wonderful idea of creating a Viet town. And they brought in architects from all over the U.S. and some from Vietnam to design a town that was architecturally traditional to them in Vietnam and yet fit into South Louisiana.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. Beautiful, interesting design, architectural styles, energy efficient. And then along comes the mayor of New Orleans, who, with an executive order, which had no input by the public, changed the zoning on a piece of property less than a mile from this neighborhood to allow a solid waste landfill to be put in. And it's a classic example of environmental racism. You put landfills, incinerators, anything you don't want in the community that has less political power. And so I've been working very actively with that community to try and change, to stop the landfill from going in, not only with litigation, but with all sorts of activities to stop the possible putting in the landfill. And it's frustrating because our state agency says it's going to be a, quote, temporary landfill. So I ask them, well, what does that mean? And they said, well, temporary means it's going to take us a year to fill it up, and it'll be there forever. And I said, well, that doesn't sound real temporary to me, because they're talking about digging into the ground 35 feet below grade level and then piling trash up to grade level and then 75 feet above. So it'll be basically the highest spot in New Orleans will be this landfill. It'll be there forever. And we just think it's a real outrageous activity to put it in this neighborhood or any neighborhood when there are alternatives such as a deconstruction and other permitted landfills that the waste could go to.
Well, of course, no one wants landfills in their backyard. Yep. That's just the way it is.
Right.
There's problems. There's smell and there's traffic and all sorts of different things. But in this particular case, because of what is going into that landfill, it will be a concentrated toxic waste dump, not just a landfill.
That's correct, and that's of concern because everything that's in houses, you know, it's supposed to be a, quote, construction debris landfill, but they changed the definition of construction debris to be anything they pick up that was caused by Hurricane Katrina. It includes all the herbicides and pesticides that were in anybody's garage, all the cleaning products that were underneath the sink, you know, any pharmaceutical drugs, you know, so a whole range of things is all going to go into this hole, and the landfill is situated about 50 feet from a canal, and you cross that canal, and then you have Bayou Sauvage Wildlife Refuge. That canal also connects back to the Vietnamese community where they're using the water out of the canal to irrigate their gardens, where they have amazing agricultural practices of gardens, growing some of the similar things that they grew in Vietnam, since the climate in New Orleans and parts of South Vietnam are very similar.
Well, it sounds as if that particular community, the Vietnamese community, has really, really just charged in there and kind of applied native talents and skills and knowledge to bring their community back to life in a faster form.
Yes, it's been amazing to me working with this community, and the leadership, and the main driver in the community is the church there, which is Mary Queen of Vietnam, a Catholic church. And it's sort of the center of the community, the hub focus. And I have met and becoming friends with the two ministers, Father Luke and Father Vin. And they said on weekends now they're having between 2,000 and 2,500 people at Mass on Sunday. And what's happening, they're not there all during the week, but they're coming in on weekends to work on their houses and then have to go back because there still are not schools available in that area. So it's exactly what the mayor said he wanted to happen, but then he's sort of penalizing them for doing what he said they wanted to happen. So it's just outrageous.
In terms of your work with that community, right, what are you focusing on?
Well, we're focusing on how we can change it. Yesterday, Sunday, they had a small meeting. Congressman Honda, who's actually represents San Jose, was there. He was in New Orleans as head of the Asiatic Caucus, I think it is what it's called. But he was visiting different Asiatic groups in throughout the hurricane zone to see what was going on. So he spoke a while, and we were able to inform him of what was going on, and he's going to check when he gets back to Washington on what he can do on his end. And then also Reverend Jesse Jackson came by the church and spoke, and he's going to get involved with helping the people to fight and struggle to make this not happen. So we're working on a range of things. One, legal options. We're looking at what lawsuits can be brought. Two, we're in the midst of a mayor's election. If Mayor Nagin is defeated, the next mayor can revoke the executive order, and we're seeing what else we can do. But it's a lot of education of the community, not only the Vietnamese-American community, but the greater community of New Orleans as to what's going on.
There's a lot of poor people that were in New Orleans. Yep. I'm just curious about their future. Are they going to be able to come back? It just seems like such a difficult problem because it comes down to money so
right.
often. And I feel sorry for folks who had their homes. They may have inherited them going back generations, and this was their place, and now that it's gone. Are there any means for these people to be able to... they own the land. That's what's interesting. I would have
yes.
to assume they own the land, but the house on top of it's gone. What are their options these days?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out, what their options are. Yes, they own the land. The government is putting together this package of relief, and the way the money travels, it comes from Washington to the state of Louisiana, and they're trying to set up a program that will go to the city and or the homeowners, and we're not sure how that's going to work yet. It's all sort of, there's been a lot of money promised, but nothing's gotten here yet.
Well, the sad part about it is people can only wait so long.
That's true.
Your life can only be on hold for so long before you finally say, you know what, I'm going to have to move on. That's not fair. You've mentioned the work in the Vietnamese community, but I'm curious about other kind of almost people-oriented
right.
Attempts to have some control of their life and their destiny. I can imagine in most cases those are being overruled and trumped by regulations or lack of regulations, and so nothing's happening. But is there any opportunity for people to kind of take control of their life?
There is, and what the mayor of New Orleans has said from the very early, he wanted neighborhood groups to sort of plan how they wanted to come back, how they wanted to revision their community. So, and as part of that process, they were going to provide planners and other resource folks to the community to help them do this. Well, the sad fact is that has not happened yet. But the Holy Cross community decided, we're not going to wait. We're going to go ahead, and in fact, they've already had a number of meetings. We've been meeting weekly since December, thinking about how we're going to get back together, how the community is going to come back together, how to get back in touch with people. This coming week, we're going to have a two-day, Friday, Saturday, day-long sessions on re-envisioning what the community should look like, what kind of buildings we want there that were destroyed, and how to rebuild new. So it's really exciting to be involved with these types of groups and see the dynamic leadership coming from the grassroots up, not waiting for government to do anything. And we've been relatively blessed in that other people have sort of come forward and say, we'll help. And that's the University of Colorado School of Landscape Architecture came down and for a four-day period with 28 students and did some studies and looking at things, and then they went back to the university and they're coming back with ideas for the community. The University of Florida School of Architecture has sent a team in and they're doing a different part of the project. And then we've gotten a grant with it went through the Department of Energy, gave a grant to the Louisiana Department of Natural Resources to do workshops on energy-efficient rebuilding in the Holy Cross. So it's been all sorts of things. And then the latest things just happened is Brad Pitt. I think everybody knows Brad. He's over in Africa right now. But he's has a very keen interest in architecture. And he has partnered with Global Green, which is a nonprofit, worldwide nonprofit, and they're going to have a architectural competition to come up with ideas and plans for new or rebuilding of houses in the Holy Cross neighborhood. So that's going to be happening, and that's real. It helps the community in that we're getting publicity outside of New Orleans that we are a viable working community, and we'll just see how things move forward.
There's been some different models of planned communities where you're trying to increase, for example, green zones and open spaces and communal spaces and more or less consolidating homes. Now, some people like that, some people don't. How are things sort of developing in terms of revisioning neighborhoods?
Right. Well, the Holy Cross neighborhood, like I said, was built in the 1850s, 60s, 70s, and then, you know, been added to different times since. So there is a grid pattern in the community. There are some open spaces. And what we're trying to look at is how to bring back, it's had a real lack of services. There isn't a grocery store. There's not restaurants. There are, you know, lack of the usual services. So we've talked about how we can, there's one main highway or avenue, St. Claude Avenue. And that has sort of fallen in disrepair over the years. And so we're thinking about how we jumpstart that part of the community with some new architectural buildings to bring in, you know, grocery store, coffee shops, art galleries, neighborhood restaurants. So that's part of the revisioning. The other part is thinking about the houses that were built recently that don't really fit the character of the community and suffered damage, to deconstruct them and come back with something that's affordable for people to live in, and not gentrify the neighborhood, but keep the very rich diversity of culture in the neighborhood. And that's the main thing we want to make sure. When people hear the Lower Ninth Ward, they have these visions of all the houses blown away and from the floodwater. The Holy Cross, part of the Lower Ninth Ward, had floodwater, but it didn't have to, by the time the water got to the Holy Cross neighborhood, it was not the rush. So there was not the real physical damage. Mm-hmm. It was just more the damage from the water being there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're thinking about other ideas. There's an old warehouse along the river. We're thinking about how to convert that into a buying co-op, because there are 2,000 homes in the Holy Cross neighborhood, and we need 2,000 refrigerators, washing machines, hot water heaters. So we want to try and put together some kind of buying co-op and go to somebody and say, okay, we want 2,000 of all of these things. What kind of deal can you give us? And thereby cutting down the cost to everybody that in the community for buying those appliances and making sure they're Energy Star compliant so that their ongoing energy bill stays down also. So those are some of the ideas we've come up with our revisioning process.
Well, it's a unique opportunity. There was a time when community was an important word. Communal was an important word. Cooperative.
Yes.
I have to assume that some of those words are suddenly mainstream within that community right now.
They are, and, you know, there's other words that are out there. Co-housing, that's sort of a new, you know, where you build a series of townhouses or small houses, but they all share, you know, a big kitchen. In addition to their smaller kitchens, share a workshop, garage space, you know, so and really thinking about creative ideas on how the community can live and work together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really exciting to be here right now.
Well, that's a great spin on this thing. It's exciting to be here right now. That's good news. Amongst all of the difficulties that you folks have gone through, it's great to hear that type of spirit. And it is an opportunity. Quite honestly, we should just keep empowering this vision thing and this revisioning thing and really coming up with whole new strategies. This is a terrific opportunity for people to take a whole new way of looking at life in America. You know, We have this American ideal, which is single-family homes or multiple homes. But we have opportunities now to really rethink this, and perhaps this may be I think it really is an opportunity for some creative advancement in vision.
We think so, and that's what we're trying to say is if we recreate New Orleans and the Gulf Coast of Mississippi in a more sustainable way, a greener way, we can be a showcase to the nation as to a different way to be about living in our communities. There has been a real lack of resources into urban centers for a number of years because certain powers that be are more in favor of suburban lifestyle, and I think that's a very non-sustainable lifestyle, and we're thinking about, you know, light rail and all range of different transportation opportunities, bike paths, walking paths, and the city of New Orleans is very much designed historically for walking and easy getting around the community, so we're going back to some of our historic route.
Mm-hmm. So as you look out within that community, are you seeing homes going back up? What's the level of reconstruction, redevelopment
right.
that's going on? Is it 5% or 10%? Is the community coming back?
Don't know right now. There are lots of folks back in. We're at the stage now where most of the folks have taken out the sheetrock, if they had sheetrock, and gutted their houses. But we're not in the stage yet of everybody building back. There are some folks in Holy Cross that have already been right at the head of the pack, and they've already got their house already re-sheetrocked, repainted, ready to move back in. They're just waiting on the city to allow them to come back. And there are different stages around the city.
And if a person gets it to that point, are some people just staying in their homes?
Yep.
Yeah, well, that would seem fair.
Some people are camping out in their houses, even though the city says you're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that you want to bring us up to date on that you think we need to know about?
I think that pretty much does it. As always, they can feel free to contact me by email. The Sierra Club webpage down here is louisiana.sierraclub.org, and we try and put stuff up there. And the main thing people should take away, they should write their congressperson and ask them what they're doing to help the Gulf Coast recover. And ask them, you know, why are you putting more money out of America for rebuilding than you are into America for rebuilding?
Well, and of course, with the situation with the global war on terror, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, there's huge challenges and, of course, therefore opportunities for us to rethink our future.
Yes.
Daryl Malik-Wiley with the Sierra Club down in the New Orleans and Baton Rouge area. I want to thank you so much and wish you great success as you try to rebuild your life.
Great. Thank you very much, Sydney. You take care.
Thanks. The human spirit is perhaps the most indestructible force on Earth. And it drives us forward at times like these, often against such insurmountable obstacles. And as noble as that may be, this challenge has some uniquely complex layers that just may need attention before the serious re-emergence gains too much momentum. We learned about the cleanup, what's being done, what needs to be done, and how people are coping with the toxic remnants of disaster when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.